Hi, I'm Maggie Brennan, music director here at WCBE. We're excited to announce our new web exclusive, Live from Studio A Replay, where you can listen to some of our best Studio A sessions. We're dedicated to bringing you great music from around the world and from right here in Central Ohio. And that type of extraordinary service is only possible with your support. So please, consider making a donation of any amount by clicking the red donate button at the top of the page and keep the music going. And we thank you for your support.
We're live in Studio A with Tommy Castro. Welcome.
Well, thanks for having us.
Absolutely. And a little stripped down here, you might say, today. We have exactly
half the band with us.
Well, we'll ask about the latest Hard Believer as well as the Legendary Rhythm and Blues Review. That's your latest project, I believe. But what's this first one you're going to do for us?
This is a song. We're trying to think of songs that we could do with just a snare drum. and we came up with a couple ideas. Excuse me. So this is something I recorded on a Painkiller record a few years back. It's a song called Love Don't Care. You're getting into there's something so much bigger than you. It's got a one-track mind. It don't fight fair. You're down for the count, 'cause love don't care. Love don't care if it's right or wrong. Love don't care if you're weak or strong. You're down on your knees and you ain't got a prayer. Got you by the heart, just don't care.
It doesn't sound too stripped down, though.
Can I get just a little bit more guitar in the headphones?
You got it, he says. All right, it's Tommy Castro live from Studio A.
We've never done this before, actually, be a trio.
Well, hey, what do you think, huh?
Yeah.
Sounds pretty cool.
It was either that or just me by myself. You know, I thought,
Yeah, I think I'm going to bring Byron and Scott with me.
I'm sure you would have been just fine. Well, it's great to have you here. And it'll be, as we have mentioned, a six-piece tonight. And the guys have planned, taking the time out of their day, thank you very much, to play live for us this afternoon. And we'll do a ticket giveaway a little bit later on during the session. You just heard a track originally off the studio album Painkiller. And Hard Believer's your latest studio album. And then, Legendary Rhythm and Blues review CD, and that's live recordings from around. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how that came to?
Well, that's a live album with my band and many special guests, but all done live in different venues around the country, and on the Legendary Rhythm and Blues cruise.
And that's where you got the idea, was from the cruise.
Yeah, you know, we
take some of those artists on the road.
We did. Well, we were sort of like becoming regulars on the blues cruise, and I noticed that
Captain Tommy.
I'll try to. There's so much to say about that. You know, you can't just say blues cruise. There's a huge story behind all of that, and a lot to say. But what I'll try to do is to put it in a nutshell. One of the things that happens there that everybody seems to like the most is the musicians get a chance to get together and jam, like they don't get to do any place else, because you're all together for a 1 week. All in a, you know, a 2,000 sort of capacity cruise ship. So it's a nice big ship. There's lots of different stages and venues on the ship. But every night, they call it the Pro Jam. All the artists come together if they want to. You're not required to be there, but there's always a setup there for the musicians to jam late at night, and it goes on outdoors in the middle of the ocean, you know, and under the stars, and it's just pretty crazy. And all of the people. The whole ship will be out there just waiting for the jam because, you know, it's not the you may have seen everybody's show already, but the jam's going to happen the way it's going to happen just that night. So everybody wants to be there for that. And I thought, man, too bad we can't do something like that on land.
Uh-huh.
And so I asked a couple of other artists to come with us and do a few shows together, and we call it the Legendary Rhythm and Blues Review, and we would play our own little set, you know, with my band backing everybody up, and then at the end of the night we'd get together and jam and just kind of keep it very spontaneous and unrehearsed. Very cool. And see what happens, and, you know, I like to think people like to watch those jam sessions for the same reasons that people like to watch cliff diving, you know, not for the perfect dive.
You just don't know what's
going to
happen.
It's the danger that's involved. Anything could go wrong at any second. People are like, how are they doing it? I don't know, but it's great. You know.
And music goes on there all day and all night, so the jam is the last thing of each night on the cruise, right? That takes place.
And then people can't get enough. After at 5 in the morning, the big jam is over, and they go on down to a piano bar and carry on until 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning. And then go on and eat breakfast someplace and then go to bed. Normally, that's kind of what a lot of people do, namely Scott Sutherland, our bass player. He's got
he's
double bass.
Schedule.
He brings his double bass and goes into the piano bar after the jams, for the extended jam. And that's a little bit, you know, I don't usually make it to that anymore.
Well, it's Tommy Castro live from Studio A today.
Well, I'm going to do... a tribute to John Lee Hooker. John Lee and I were friends before he died. I was lucky enough to get to hang out with him a little bit, and I asked him to sing on one of my records. And we live in Northern California, you know, so it was a reasonable thing to put together. You know, I got with his management and said, "Do you think John would sing on my record?" You know, and so long story short, he did this vocal on one of my songs. And about a week later, he passed away. So it turned out to be the last thing he ever did on record was just this guest vocal on my song called Guilty of Love. And ever since then, I've been doing, you know, kind of a tribute to him, doing one of his songs. One of the songs that he's famous for anyway is called Serves Me Right to Suffer. And we do this one in our show just about every night.
That's
and
great.
It goes like... Serves me right to suffer.
serves me right to be alone. Yes, it serves me, it serves me. Serves me right to suffer. Serves me right just to be alone. And in my mind I'm living people in a day that's past and gone. We'll be right back. be alone all night. Me right just to be
practiced a little bit before you got here. <Just kidding. laughs> That was amazing. Tommy Castro live from Studio A, and paying a little tribute there to John Lee Hooker.
That actually wound up on that live legendary record.
Awesome.
Because I never recorded that before. It's something we do live all the time, so it wound up on that.
On the latest, after The Hard Believer, that one came out. Well, just earlier this year, I believe.
The name of that album, I remember after they packaged it up and I saw it and it registered, you know. I kind of let Alligator Records, they really know what they're doing. And I turned in the performances and I had listened to some mixes and I said, yeah, that sounds great. And they took it from there, you know. Got a really cool kind of throwback cover and everything.
Uh-huh, yeah.
But then I realized the title of that thing was too long. Tommy Castro presents the legendary Rhythm and Blues Review Live. You just can't say that. Like, hey, what about that Tommy Castro Rhythm and Blues Review Live record? You know,
Painkiller is much
mouthful.
Easier.
I like two-syllable titles. Painkiller, Hard Believer, Soul Shaker.
There you go. Well, that's three syllables.
Sorry.
I'm not kidding.
Three max. I'll go four every now and then if there's a nice balance.
Painkillers too. There you go. Tommy Castro live from Studio A. We'll talk about the first time you met John Lee Hooker.
Well, I don't really remember the first time I met John Lee Hooker because we would run into each other a lot. You know, like I say, lived in Northern California. In fact, I probably met him years ago. He would, you know, he lived in Atherton or he lived in Redwood City, and he would like he was a you know, he had started to become, he had a big sort of like a, what do you call it? Like where he'd been around forever. He's a legend of the blues. And then at some point, there was an album that was put out and his management team and everybody got together and somehow all of us, and all these musicians came to support him. It might have been the Healer album that did it, that put him on the map big time. And he would like got all kinds of money and stuff, and he would come around to clubs with a limousine, you know, full of like people just hanging on entourage, you know, all these young girls and people just would, and he would just come in and bring a party, and he was just enjoying his life, you know. And I think I met him on one of those times. We'd be playing in a bar or something like that, and
very cool.
Probably met John Lee then. But years later, we wound up with the same booking agent, and we'd wind up on shows together and stuff, and. And he was always really, really nice to me. You know, I was always amazed that he remembered who I was or remembered my name or any of that stuff, you know. And he told me to come over to the house anytime, you know. And I remember, well, so when we did this recording, we did it at his house, sitting on his couch. You know, the whole band had already done we did the recording in the studio. And then he was just going to sing a vocal over that, you know, ad-libbing and stuff like that. And on top of this recording that we already had in place. So we just kind of went over his house with a mobile recording unit and set it up in the kitchen. And he was sitting on the couch when we got there in his full blues man, you know, John Lee Hooker outfit with a hat. You know, he always wore a hat and a suit. and you know, dress shirt and dress shoes and sitting on the couch like that in his living room watching a ball game. And I said, John, don't get up. And he was 80-something years old. I said, just, you know, stay there. We're going to work around you, man. And we just brought him a microphone and headphones. Cool. And there's a picture of us sitting on his couch somewhere on my website probably. And it's like I really cherish that moment. And you could tell that I'm like just going, wow, I can't believe this is happening to me. I'm sitting here and John Lee Hooker singing on my record.
Hey, he might have been saying the same thing about you being there.
Somebody. I don't think so. He was a real nice guy, though. I don't think he was thinking anything of the kind.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that. And let's go back to when you were a young kid and you first picked up the guitar. Did you know you wanted to play the blues, or were you just playing for fun, or was there something specific you wanted to learn how to play?
I was playing for fun. I had a brother who played in like local rock and roll bands and stuff, and he was like, you know, getting all the girls and having a great time. He's very popular, and I was 6 years younger than him, and I was like, he was my hero, and so I wanted to be like Ray, and I started fooling around with his guitar when he wasn't around, you know, and he caught me doing it, and he said, yeah, okay, well here, I'll show you a chord, show you a new chord. You go out and wash my car. Okay.
Bargaining said, chip there. Huh?
Yeah, I'll show you another little thing here. Go ahead, shine my shoes. When you're done with that, I'll show you something else. It was like that, you know, and I learned a few things. But I got together with my friends, and I started hearing this, you know, this blues music. I didn't realize it was blues. I thought it was rock. It was Eric Clapton. It was the Rolling Stones. It was, you know, bands like that.
Yeah.
Lots of British Invasion blues was coming around, and there was bands like Paul Butterfield Blues Band, and there was a whole sort of blues explosion, as you know, in the 60s, and that's mm-hmm. when I got exposed to it, and I kind of, that was what I liked, you know.
And then you delved deeper into more history
after,
of it?
Well, after I'd been, you know, yeah, fooling around with that stuff for a while, I started, you know, like all of, almost everybody I know that's my age and my, that does this, you know, friends of mine like Coco Montoya or Jimmy Thackeray or Joe Louis Walker or any of those guys, mm-hmm. you know, we all kind of did the same. We found the blues that way. Then we started digging, where did it come from?
Yeah.
Everybody wants to know, well, where did that come from? You know, and so we found B.B. King. I found Muddy Waters. I found Lord James and, you know, Muddy and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what happened. And then I just, I really never thought I would be doing this for a living. I just was having fun. Yeah, still having fun. Still having a pretty good time.
Yeah, it's a good, I think so. I can pick up on that a little bit.
Good.
Tommy Castro, thank you so much for being here. And Scott and Byron Wright, thank you for being here. And
thank you.
I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. And we'll do a ticket giveaway after this last song. What are you guys going to do?
Oh, another song.
Do you mind?
I thought you were getting rid of us.
No, not yet. I'm leaving you.
I got one more in me. Okay, so... For years, I mean, my band's been together about 20 years, and for the first 15 years of that time, or something along those lines, just sort of flew under the radar of the Blues Music Awards and never was nominated for anything, and I thought they hated me. And so, no, I didn't take it personal, but just, you know, there's a lot of acts out there, there's a lot of talent, and I just never got a nomination. And finally, one year, we got nominated, you know. And then the next year, we got nominated for a couple of awards again, and my sax player was up for awards, Keith, you know, and I said, hey, man, we better go to Memphis just in case we win. What if we win, you know? maybe we should be there. So we went to Memphis, just him and I, see what happened. As it turned out, we won a... best record, I think, best contemporary blues album, and something else. Oh,
you've had
B.B. King Entertainer of the Year
quite a few awards.
But that was the first time we got anything, and so we were pretty excited about it. We're down there for the music awards this year. For some reason, it was being held in Tunica, Mississippi, instead of Memphis, where it usually is, which is just a little ways down the road from Memphis. So here's the story. A friend of ours who lives there now, he has this cool old Cadillac. He volunteered to drive us from the airport in Memphis to Tunica, where the awards were, and bring us back to the airport the next day. So that was the plan. We didn't know if we were going to win anything or not, but it turns out we did win a couple of awards. We're driving back through Mississippi on Highway 61, heading for Memphis, and it dawned on me, wow, you know, here I am, a kid from San Jose, California, you know, playing blues music for a living, and I'm driving through Mississippi, where all the great bluesmen came from, going to Memphis, Tennessee, where all my soul heroes, you know, where that whole Stax thing came from, and I got Blues Music Awards under my belt, and I thought, man, I got to remember this feeling. There must be a, you know, might be a song in it or something like that, you know. And then I looked over at my friend Ray's gas gauge, and it was on empty. And I said, man, Ray, I hope we make it back to Memphis, you know. And then I realized that was a good title for a song. Now, most of this story is fiction, to use a kind word.
We'll take that.
And it goes like this.
Back to Memphis one more.
Thank you very much.